The Public News Service Daily Newscast, October 23rd, 2023. I'm Farah Siddiqui. From PBS, President Joe Biden told a crowd of Democratic donors over the weekend about a decades-old photo he took with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He wrote on the back, "BB, I love you. I don't agree with a damn thing you say." As expectations grow that Israel will launch a ground offensive towards Hamas in the Gaza Strip, Biden finds himself facing a difficult balancing act of demonstrating full-throated support for America's closest ally in the Middle East, while trying to also press that Israel act with enough restraint to keep the war from spreading. Here at home, October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and experts say the country faces a massive shortage of people trained to fight cyber attacks.
Cyber fraud directed at government agencies rose 40% between March and May of this year compared to the first 3 months of 2023. Tony Colson, executive director of the Cybersecurity Center at Cal State San Bernardino, says the U.S. cybersecurity workforce is short, about 660,000 people.
There's about 1.8 million jobs in cybersecurity currently. About a third of them are vacant. In California alone, it's about 35,000.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
New York disability rights advocates are working to make polling places more accessible. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finds 25% of the state's population has a disability. Edwin J. Vieira reports.
A Brennan Center for Justice report finds 95% of polling places in New York State weren't disability accessible. Dr. Sharon McLennan-Weir with the Center for Independence of the Disabled New York says one way to begin rectifying this is better poll worker training on operating ballot marking devices.
A lot of the time, the machine is not plugged in. The paper that's needed to mark the ballots are not put in. And it seems as if the poll workers don't even know that machine exists.
The Brennan Center report recommends the state legislature add options for when voters want to cast ballots early, like requiring polling places to offer curbside voting and the implementation of mobile voting units.
An updated map shows how much risk your home faces from wildfires. Eric Galatas has more.
Data from the Colorado State Forest Service shows that more than 1 million Coloradans live in areas with moderate to very high risk of wildfire. Chad Julian is a wildfire mitigation specialist with the service who says the biggest change from previous maps is improved technology showing where people build homes and other structures.
More rural areas, smaller communities, subdivisions. There was a lot more growth in homes in those areas in the wildland-urban interface, and there's more homes at risk than there were in 2017.
The latest Colorado Wildfire Risk Assessment offers maps showing wildfire risk by neighborhood. The Forest Service's Home Ignition Zone checklists offer strategies for protecting homes at csfs.colostate.edu.
This is Public News Service. And October is also National Farm to School Month, and the Department of Agriculture is announcing a new effort to improve students' access to high-quality food in Maryland and nationwide. Rep. Pivato reports.
The USDA will partner with the nonprofit Urban School Food Alliance to provide training and technology to school districts to help improve the quality of school food. The partnership seeks to bring regional farmers into the mix, and Dr. Katie Wilson with the Alliance says that will require some new approaches.
There are lots of rules and regulations from the federal, state, local level, but in many cases, those rules and regulations are not conducive to buying local, buying fresher foods. And so we really want to look at what are the best practices in school food procurement that we could lift up and share with people nationwide.
Wilson says the project is set to run for 3 years with the option for a fourth after an initial stage. The program will eventually identify needed regulatory reforms around food procurement.
A Pennsylvania environmental group is touting electric vehicles as both cost-effective for drivers and a means to address climate change. Our Danielle Smith reports.
Keystone State motorists appear to be embracing the transition to EVs, with registrations surging 82% last year to nearly 43,000. Elizabeth Gore with the Environmental Defense Fund says car companies have made billions of dollars in commitments to help drive down EV prices. Her group estimates Pennsylvania EV owners could save more than $25,000 over the life of the vehicle, along with lower fuel costs.
There are tax credits that were in part of the Biden Clean Energy Plan. Those can be point of sale rebates. And so families can stop worrying about the price of gas and they can experience lower maintenance costs.
Gore emphasizes that the Inflation Reduction Act included substantial tax rebates for buying an electric car or passenger truck, as much as $7,500 for a new vehicle and $4,000 for a used one.
Economic support in the Indiana arts and culture scene is strong. A new report by an arts advocacy group identifies that support in tens of millions of dollars.
The nonprofit Americans for the Arts just released a study on the economic impact of arts and culture on communities, including in Indiana. Indiana Arts Commission Executive Director Maya Michelson says the economic impact the arts have in their respective communities is undeniable.
I think the arts and creative sector provides a great pathway for conscious effort and investment related to driving economic growth in the state.
The 2022 study says in Indianapolis alone, the economic impact of the arts totaled almost $524 million. I'm Terry D. reporting.
This is Farah Siddiqui for Public News Service, member and listener supported, heard on interesting radio stations, your favorite podcast platform, and you can find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.